I've been thinking, I want you to be happier. I want you to be happier. When the morning comes and we see what we've become, in the cold light of day, we're a flame in the wind, not the fire that we begun. Every argument, every word we can't take back, 'cause with all that has happened, I think that we both know the way that the story ends.
Chapter 45. For as long as you need me.
I want to change my mind, 'cause this just don't feel right to me. I want to raise your spirits. I want to see you smile. No, that means I'll have to leave. Lately, I've been thinking, I want you to be happier. I want you to be happier. So
it was a subdued celebration, but a celebration nonetheless. Cleve sat slumped in his chair and watched it go on around him, his barely touched and rapidly becoming lukewarm drink in one hand and a data pad in the other. Most of the partygoers were the soldiers that had taken part in the raid, talking to each other and drinking as they listened to old Republican music. But Cleve had seen a couple of the Jedi there as well. They were staying to their own small groups, but the intensity of their gazes as they scanned the room showed a great deal of interest in the going-ons. Sipping his flat beer, Cleve tapped a finger against the side of his datapad. It was encouraging to see Jedi here, after what he'd learned from the data pulled from the Academy's computers. It had very quickly become clear, as he had scrolled through the information, that further cooperation between the Resistance and the Order would be necessary to truly capitalize on the advantage their raid had gained them. Now was not the time to approach them, though, he thought. One of their ships had been sacrificed to disable the interdictor that had kept them trapped in the Drummond Koss system. A credit for your thoughts? Cleve blinked as he resurfaced from his thoughts and turned to face the person that had spoken. Queen Organa, her bodyguards nowhere to be seen, stood only a few feet from him, a mug in her hand and a smile on her face. The mug was a fat orange thing with a crude smile painted on it. It clashed horribly with the black patterned dress she was wearing. A smile tugged at the corners of his mouth.
Queen Organa.
General Cleve. The human woman didn't wait for him to invite her to sit down, taking the seat across from him at the table. You're not usually one for parties. Cleve shrugged, his smile widening. After everything that happened during the raid, not even I can resist a celebration. She chuckled. Indeed, it certainly sounded dramatic back here. Going down to the depths of an evil lair, having to fight against an Imperial fleet, a last-minute save from the Jedi, it sounded like a holovid. She took a sip of her drink, still smiling, and then put the mug back down. Speaking of the Jedi, where are they? I would think that they would be the heroes of the hour. There are a few here, but most of them appear to be having a rather pointed talk in one of our wardrooms, Cleve replied. I rather think that Master Unduli was not precisely truthful when she and the others first arrived. Organa hummed. They did mention that they hadn't officially made a decision to help us when I went up to talk to them, she said casually. Cleve raised an eyebrow.
Really now? That said something interesting.
Organa took another sip. Really? It was quite interesting in their ship, actually. She drummed her fingers against the table. I got the impression that they were rather of two minds when it came to working with the Resistance. Very interesting. And worrying, considering the half-formed plans that had started to congeal in his mind. Any one party seemed to have precedence over the other?
She shrugged.
I couldn't say. Senator Mothma interrupted with the news of your needing rescue only a few minutes into our meeting, and, well, I couldn't exactly stay if they would be going into battle. Now Cleve was the one drumming his fingers on the table.
I'd rather hoped.
He trailed off. He had already spoken to several of his men that had been part of the ground team, and they had all been full to bursting with praise for the Jedi. Several swore up and down that they would have died even without the Jedi and their clones helping. They had been able to sense the Inquisitors coming and have them prepared before the creatures had attacked, found children that had hidden or been hidden from them. One team had even told of a Jedi preventing a bomb from going off with their telekinesis. But if there was a party within their order that was against helping the Resistance... Organa raised an eyebrow at him.
Is that bad news?
She asked. He rubbed his chin before answering.
It could be,
he said reluctantly.
We retrieved a great deal of information about the Inquisitors and their operating procedure from the Academy, and my men were full of nothing but praise for the Jedi during the raid. I had been hoping that with the cooperation under our belt, we could work together more, take the fight to the Inquisitorius, so to speak. You know my views on them.
Know and agree with. Organa's forehead crinkled thoughtfully. If I may give you some advice, focus on the younger Jedi while making your pitch.
Any particular reason for that?
The older Jedi that I saw on the ship, they were all dressed very traditionally, while the younger were dressed more like spacers. As well, it was mostly the younger that were part of the rescue party, was it not?
Cleve understood. You believe them to be more open and experienced in working with outsiders.
Organa nodded and took another sip. As well, if I'm not mistaken, they're the only ones at this party.
Cleve paused, and then swept the room with his eyes. She was right. Maybe they weren't taking part, but they were definitely present. And not one of them was wearing the traditional Jedi robes.
This was interesting.
My thanks for bringing this up,
he said. I will certainly keep it in mind.
Organa smiled.
Glad to help, she said. I'm just as eager as you are to take down the Inquisitorius. Her smile sharpened. Especially after what I saw in the medbay.
He looked at her and saw the anger in her dark eyes.
Carefully, he put down his datapad.
I was meaning to talk with the medics tomorrow, he said. Is it that bad?
A flash of annoyance crossed her face, though it was quickly replaced with understanding.
You were busy on the bridge for most of this, weren't you?
She sighed and rubbed her forehead, her shoulders rounding just a bit into a slump.
It's just... How could anyone do such things to a single child, let alone hundreds? There were children there with missing limbs, missing eyes, burns and bruises.
She stopped as her voice cracked and took another drink.
Not a sip this time, but a gulp.
Cleve's fingers were beginning to hurt from how hard he was gripping the table.
I suppose that I should start looking into finding psychiatrists, then.
Organa grimaced.
It might not be a bad idea, she said quietly. I've only heard a bit of what they were put through, and I want to talk to one myself.
He pressed his lips together.
Well, we can start that tomorrow, then, he said. For tonight, though, we should celebrate that they were rescued.
He raised his glass towards her. And that it will never happen to them again, Organa said. She clinked her mug with his.
Never again, Cleve repeated solemnly.
Luminara had never been so glad to leave a council meeting. Spending close to 4 hours explaining her reasoning for taking a quarter of the fleet to help with the Resistance was not her idea of decompressing.
As she stepped out of the room and began to walk down the hall to the base's kitchens, she supposed that she was lucky they had at least gotten her another skirt before demanding answers. The hallway was quiet, something that she was also thankful for. Her head was pounding, and her eyes were gritty, and all she wanted was a bed to lie down in. But she knew from long experience that her mind would not allow her to sleep if she tried to do just that. Too much had happened this day, and she would need to walk and think for a while before she could truly sleep. Perhaps she could check in on the rescued children. Her heart gave a twinge as she remembered the two that she had personally saved. Jai and the Sith-eyed boy. She hadn't been able to learn the other boy's name. They had had to run for the transport, but both had shown scars from their time in the academy. After they had returned to the carrier, she had lost track of them as they were taken for treatment. She'd had to check over her own men, and so hadn't been able to follow them. Yes, that would settle her mind. Seeing the children safe. Luminara turned and began to go down a different corridor, one that led to the medbay. Roughly halfway down, having passed several doors, she stopped and cocked her head to one side. After everything that had happened, she had thought that everyone was asleep, but she had just heard the low murmur of voices. Ahead, she could see a door open with light spilling out. Quietly, she headed towards it. She thought that she felt a strong force signature, somewhat muffled by shielding. It was very familiar, in fact.
So you managed to get all the tangles out?
Master Skywalker. Luminara peered around the doorway to see who he was talking to.
It took a few hours, but yes,
Senator Amidala said. She and her husband were sitting on small boxes, facing away from the door. There was a third person as well, a small figure with bright red hair that shone in the dim lighting of the room. The figure was curled up against Senator Amidala's side, its head resting against the woman's shoulder in a way that suggested a deep sleep.
I didn't mind, though. After all they've taken from her, the least we could do is let her keep her hair.
Skywalker sighed and shifted in his seat.
She let them look her over after?
Amidala chuckled softly.
She looked like she was sucking on a lemon the entire time, but yes.
Skywalker let out an amused huff.
She's a brave girl, did I tell you? She volunteered to go back into the academy.
Yes, you did. Amidala sounded amused. Several times, in fact.
Skywalker shrugged.
Well, can't hurt to repeat it.
Amidala sighed. Luminara saw her hand gently stroke over the girl's red hair, the profile of her face downcast.
I miss the kids.
Me too. Skywalker said softly, like he was confessing.
I mean, I know Luke's right up there, but he might as well be in another sector.
Have you talked to Obi-Wan recently? Amidala said.
Maybe Luke's learned enough shielding.
Skywalker was shaking his head.
I already did. It's still too noticeable in the Force when we're near each other. If we try to stay together, we'll be leading Sidious right to us. And I can't do that. I can't risk it.
Amidala put her hand that had been stroking the girl's head on her husband's shoulder.
I know. I was there, remember?
His head dipped, and Luminara could hear him sigh raggedly.
I know.
They were silent for a moment, sitting together.
I'll tell him that you love him,
Amidala said quietly.
I can visit him and Leia, at least. and I'll leave as soon as we're done fueling, without a word," Skywalker said bitterly. "They know that you love them." Luminara quietly slipped past the door, as Amidala wrapped her arms around Skywalker's shoulders, pulling him close. This was something intimate, not to be seen by her eyes, and her stomach squirmed in embarrassment for doing so. Not disapproval, though. It was funny. When Obi-Wan had returned to them with little Luke in tow, she had been one of the many Jedi that had disapproved of the boy. He had been a reminder of their failure to properly teach the Chosen One. Now, though, watching the comfort that Skywalker and Amidala gave each other, she could only summon a deep exhaustion. The medbay was still a little ways away, the corridor winding its lazy way through the abandoned temple that made up the resistance base. Doors, smaller than the large ones that led to the main hangar, opened into the hot and damp Yavin night, letting in the low noises of night insects and animals. Few people were awake here besides her, smartly having gone to bed after such an exciting day, leaving the hallways silent and still. It was because the hallways were so quiet that she heard the noise. A wet, gasping breath. Immediately, Luminara stopped. The exhaustion that she had felt melted away as her nerves began to jangle and she reached for her lightsaber. No one other than her should be in this hallway. So close to the medbay, it could be nothing good. Carefully, she resumed her forward movement, creeping along in the shadows. She and the others had sacrificed too much. Another breath, coming from the doorway ahead. That one led to a small balcony, if she remembered correctly. Moonlight was streaming in through it, the perfect rectangle marred by a misshapen shadow. She stepped carefully at the edge of the light, reaching out through the Force, and dropped her hand from her weapon, stepping fully into the light. "Jai?" The auburn-haired boy jumped slightly, and then yelped, his bandaged legs buckling underneath him. Desperately, he grasped at the ivy tree he had been leaning on, only succeeding in starting to topple it along with him. Luminara darted forward, catching the boy before he had fallen more than a few inches, and steadying him against her. "Jai!" The boy was trembling in her arms, clutching at her clothes with bony fingers. Closer now, she could catch the sweet, fruity scent of Bacta wafting from him, no doubt the reason why he could walk after the Eighth Brother's attack. His head lay back against her shoulder, and in the bright moonlight, she could see how his cheeks gleamed with fresh tears. "Youngling," she began, trying to ignore the tears. "Bacta works best when you are not reopening your wounds." She stopped, as a fresh wave of tears began to track down the boy's face. His grip on her tightened, and abruptly he had managed to turn, burying his face in the crook of her neck and sobbing quietly. Why did younglings keep crying around her? She really was not good at this sort of thing. Awkwardly, she shifted her own grip so that she was embracing Jai comfortably, rubbing a hand up and down his back in jerky motions. "There, there," she said, cringing inwardly at the inadequacy of her words. "Why are you out of your bed, then?"
"You're not a dream," Jai sobbed. "It's not a dream. It really happened."
Luminara blinked, her hands stilling. "I beg your pardon." She had never been described as a dream before, even by the most lecherous of planetary rulers. "A dream?" Jai was choking on his breaths so hard that he was trembling and seemed determined to burrow into her.
dreamed there,
he choked out.
I dreamed of everyone being rescued over and over. But every time I woke up, I was still in a sob.
His words disappeared underneath more sobs. Numenara pulled the boy a little closer. She understood what he was saying now, sobbing into her shoulder and soaking her shirt. A dream of freedom, waved in front of your eyes and then taken away more times than you could count. It would make its reality all the more unbelievable when it finally happened. She tucked his head underneath her chin and squeezed him tightly. This is real, she said. I am real. You and the others are free, and no one will let the Inquisitors take you again. The boy continued to sob.
I woke up in a bed, and I thought I'd just been hurt again. I needed to move. I needed to see.
It's all right. Luminara reached up and smoothed the hand over his hair. You need to go back to the medbay, though, and continue healing. Jai's fingers twisted in the thick cloth of her shirt.
I'll just wake up again, though, and think that I'm back there.
He pulled his head out from underneath her chin and looked up at her with wet and desperate eyes.
Can I just stay out here, or stay in your ship?
Luminara smoothed his hair back. The doctors need to be able to keep a close eye on you, she said gently. As the boy's face began to crumple into a fresh wave of tears, though, she hurried to add on to the sentence. I will stay with you, though. When you wake up again, you can see me and know that it wasn't a dream. Jai was sagging heavily against her now, even as he kept his desperate gaze on her face. She cupped the back of his head and pressed their foreheads together, keeping her eyes open. The boy's brown eyes, shiny as they were and gathering tears at the corners, were fixed on her own bright blue eyes. I promise, she said, this is not a dream. And I will be there when you wake. He searched her eyes, clearly looking for any sign of lying. She kept her gaze steady and reached through the force for him, letting him feel the truth of her words. Through the force, he felt as delicate and trembling as a butterfly, as shaky as the eyelids that fell closed as he let out a small sigh and sagged his full weight against her.
Okay, he said in a very small voice. I'll go back.
Luminara smoothed his hair back for a third time. Good. Can you still walk? Jai took a step back from her and took a hold of the ivy tree again, leaning heavily against it and no longer looking her in the eye.
They made us walk when we were hurt worse than this.
His voice was still very small.
I can make it back.
Luminara pressed her lips together, but didn't comment as he began to limp forward, instead keeping a steady, reassuring hand on his back. She would catch him if he fell. Thankfully, it was only a short walk to the medbay from the balcony they were on. Less than 5 minutes, and they were slipping into the darkened room, filled with rows of beds that held small bodies curled up in sleep. She could see a single empty bed, down at the far end of the room. Jai began to head towards it. Following along, Luminara let her gaze drift more around the room. The children were not the only inhabitants here.
Small, uncomfortable chairs were set alongside several beds, filled with the larger frames of adults. She recognized several of them. There was Quinlan, sitting with his arms crossed and chin to his chest, clearly sleeping beside the bed of a dark-skinned girl with a bandaged stump of an arm. Commander Sato's assistant, who she believed was named Katarn, was half-lying across the bed of an older rescue, his single arm laid protectively across the young man's chest. Their faces were close to each other, revealing a familial resemblance in the slack softness of relieved sleep. At the very end, there was a small private room with a window. Briefly looking in, a smile twitched at the corners of her mouth. Jarus was sitting up in a slightly more comfortable-looking chair, his head also bowed in sleep like Quinlan's had been. His hand, though, was not crossed over his chest, but holding the smaller hand of the dark-haired boy lying in the bed, surrounded by small beeping machines. So he had reached his Padawan. That was good. A small noise of pain pulled her attention back to Jai. He was trying to crawl back into the bed, but had stopped as he lifted his leg. She could see blood spotting the white bandages. Gently, she placed a hand on his shoulder to stop him. Guiding him, she had him turn and sit down on the must-white sheets of the bed, and then helped him lift his legs.
"Thanks,"
Jai mumbled, his eyelids drooping as he lay back against the pillows. "It's no problem," Luminara murmured, drawing the sheets up to his chin. She patted them in place as he snuggled down into the bed, and then turned to pick up a nearby chair. As she did so, a hand grasped her skirt.
"Wait."
Turning her head, she saw that Jai had sat up slightly, the sheets falling down his chest.
"You said that you'd stay."
"And I will, little one," Luminara replied. One hand holding on to the chair, she used the other one to gently disentangle his hand from her clothing. She didn't let go of it, though. She was finding herself reluctant to distress the boy any more. "I was just getting a chair," she explained, winding her fingers with his. She placed the chair down carefully, wincing at the small click it made, and sat down. "I promised you that I would be here when you woke, and I mean to keep to that." Jai chewed on his lower lip, but lay back down, keeping his eyes on her. His eyelids were drooping again, though, and with her promise, he seemed to be falling back asleep. "I promise," Luminara repeated, leaning back in her own chair. Tiredness was tugging at her own lids now. The medbay was warm and quiet, and everything that had happened today now felt very far away. "I promise." Kanan had been pulled out of a deep sleep earlier as Yavin's medbay began to wake up, but he'd been able to slip back into a doze after a few minutes. He was aware of people moving around outside the small room he and Ezra had been put into, talking to each other in low, soothing tones, but they were blessedly left alone. Probably didn't want to disturb Ezra's rest. With how skinny he was, they hadn't been able to give him a full dose of painkillers for his injuries, and Kanan had had to spend a good hour helping push the pain down far enough for him to sleep. Speaking of which, Kanan regretfully forced himself to push away the tempting blanket of sleep and open his eyes. Rubbing at his face, he grimaced at the feeling of old sweat and stubble. He hadn't taken a shower last night, too focused on Ezra, but he'd definitely be taking one today. Turning his head to Ezra, he reached through the force to check how much pain his Padawan was in. Not much, thankfully. In the force, Ezra was a low, soft light, darkened by sleep. The bright threads and sparks that would have signified pain were few, centered around his leg and his back,
where it had turned out that the seventh sister had burned him with her lightsaber. He had been furious when he discovered that after Ezra's surgery... The door clicked open. Kanan was yanked out of his light meditation and automatically turned toward the noise, expecting to see a doctor or a medroid. His eyes widened when he saw who was there.
Huh. Done with your nap, then?
Janice leaned against the doorframe, crossing his arms and shooting Kanan a challenging look. Before Kanan could answer him, though, he was nudged out of the way by Gray. The old clone was not wearing any of his armor. A thick knitted jumper in a faded blue that spoke of many washings covered up what Kanan was pretty sure was his armor's undersuit, along with a pair of battered old work pants. Ducking underneath Janice's arm, he shot the other man a warning look and straightened, folding his arms in front of him. The sleeves of his jumper were long enough to cover his hands, and he fiddled with them before speaking.
"We came to visit the kid," he said quietly. "See how he was doing after everything. I didn't mean to interrupt whatever you were doing. I kind of figured you'd have gone back to your ship to change."
"It's okay," Kanan said, surprising himself with the realization that he wasn't just lying to be polite. It really did feel okay that they were here. Looking at Gray's anxious face, he felt none of the fearful echoes that he usually did at the sight of a clone. Just a little tired. These chairs weren't great for sleeping. And actually, a little glad. Shifting in his seat, Kanan leaned forward and took a breath.
"I actually wanted to talk to you before you took off wherever."
Looking up, both Gray and Janice were looking at him with surprise, and he felt his ears heat. Still, he made himself forge onwards.
"I wanted to thank you, both of you, for what you did."
He paused and found himself looking at his Padawan, still peacefully sleeping with the painkillers coursing through his body. "For Ezra."
So your head's fully out of your ass now? Not gonna go back up there for another vacation?"
"Janice!" Gray hissed, turning his head to glare at the tall Kalaran. He was still leaning against the doorframe, but on the other side now. His arms were crossed over his chest, and he shrugged.
"I think it's a reasonable question," he said in an overly innocent tone.
"It is," Kanan said, cutting in before the two of them could get into an argument.
"I messed up with Ezra, and you two stepped up. You were the ones to have his back at the academy, not me. It should have been me, but it wasn't. And I wanted to thank you for that."
Both of them were silent. Kanan scratched the back of his head awkwardly.
So, next time you're around, once Ezra's discharged, maybe you can come by for something to eat? Or a drink?"
Yeah, they were both staring at him in disbelief now. Well, Gray looked to be staring in disbelief and joy, tears gathering in the corners of his eyes. Janice, however...
"This is a change," he said slowly,
leaving his post in the doorway.
"Usually you can't wait to get away from us after we've helped you. Any reason for the change?"
Kanan shrugged and looked away. His ears were burning with embarrassment again.
"It's like I said, you stepped up when I didn't, and it got me thinking about a lot of stuff."
"Huh." Janice drummed his fingers on his arm.
"Maybe we'll take you up on that offer then."
"Maybe we will," Gray agreed. He was still smiling. It quickly faded, though, as he stepped forward and looked down at Ezra's small form lying on the bed. Gently, he reached down and touched the sheet covering the kid's legs. The pressure made the small peaks of cloth that had formed in Ezra's sleep collapse, revealing the empty space where his left leg had been.
Kanan squeezed his hands together at the sight. Recriminations rose up in his head again, as painful as when he had first seen what the Seventh Sister had done to him and Sabine. If he had been there... Doctors are going to wait until he heals before installing a reception port, he said gruffly, pushing the bad thoughts down. Once it's properly bonded with his body, they'll install the actual limb. He chewed on the inside of his cheek for a moment. Doctor told me that it wouldn't take long. Lightsaber wounds heal pretty fast. Something about the heat and speed of the blow.
That's good to hear, Janice said quietly.
He stepped up behind Gray and placed a hand on his back.
Kid doesn't look right without both legs.
Yeah, Kanan said absentmindedly. Sitting back up, he put his hand on his Padawan's arm and reached through their bond to check on him again. Still a deep, steady sleep. This time, though, he could feel a small, unconscious curl of affection towards him, like he was taking Kanan's hand.
Is that invitation only for after Ezra gets out?
Gray asked suddenly. Kanan looked at him questioningly.
I guess not,
he stuttered, a little surprised by the sudden U-turn in the conversation.
Why, you planning on leaving soon?
Gray traded an odd look with Janice before turning back to him.
Kind of, he said. Me and Janice just happen to know a guy who does prosthetics, and, well, I know how the military can be when it comes to getting non-soldiers replacement limbs.
Oh, Kanan said, blinking.
Oh, thanks, yeah, but don't worry. Some of the higher-ups were in last night, said Ezra's first on the list. He was kind of the mascot for this whole thing, apparently. So they don't want him languishing with only one leg for too long.
Janice snorted.
Generous of them.
Kanan shrugged.
It works out for Ezra, though, so I'm not about to complain. Might help if you mentioned this guy to one of the supply officers, though. A couple of the other kids are missing limbs, too, and apparently full limb replacements for children can be hard to find.
He cut himself off.
You know what? Why don't you come by tonight? Hera knows more about this stuff than I do.
Gray looked at him carefully.
You okay with that? I know you invited us, but it's been less than a cycle.
Kanan raised a hand to stop him.
I think, he said, that it's time I started getting over it. And I think that we might as well start now. Ezra ached all over as he swam back to consciousness, but it was a distant ache, like it was happening in an old memory. His lids were rusty blast doors, fighting him as he slowly opened them up. A bright white ceiling greeted him. Mazzly, he wondered where he was. This certainly wasn't the ceiling of the ghost. And it was too clean for the academy.
Ezra, someone called. Ezra turned his head too fast and winced as pain lanced up his back to stab into his skull. Against his will, a gasp left his lips, and he squeezed his eyes shut. A large, warm hand covered his forehead.
It's okay, Ezra, the person said.
Something tickled inside of his skull, and the pain abruptly lessened.
It's okay.
Relaxing back into the bed, Ezra leaned into the touch. It was easier to open his eyes now, and as he did, a face swam into view. A familiar face. Ezra smiled.
Kanan.
Kanan smiled down at him, the corners of his eyes crinkling.
Hey, kid, he said. How are you feeling?
Better now, Ezra replied. Then he frowned.
Kind of achy, though.
Kanan's smile shrank, and he looked down. Yeah, he said quietly. I'm not surprised.
Shame came off of him in waves, and Ezra frowned again. Kanan shouldn't feel like that, he thought. He remembered faintly the sound of breaking glass in that tunnel with the Seventh Sister, and suddenly Kanan had been there. Wait. He could feel Kanan's shame. Literally feel it. Whipping his head back to Kanan, he ignored the pain that lanced through him again and reached out through the Force. Was Kanan... He felt something reach back to him. A broad smile broke out across Ezra's face. Looking back up from the sheets, Kanan shot him a tired smile. Yeah, he said. The smile quickly faded, though. Taking Ezra's hand in his, he looked at Ezra intently, his green-blue eyes piercing. Ezra, he said, his voice soft. I'm sorry. Ezra blinked.
What for?
Kanan huffed quietly, looking like he couldn't decide between being sad and being amused.
For abandoning you? For putting my feelings above yours? For not even asking you how you felt about our bond? Take your pick.
His expression slid more fully into sadness.
I was wrong to do that. I should have just talked to you and not left everyone else to pick up the pieces.
Ezra blinked some more.
But you came in the end, when it really mattered. So it's okay.
Kanan pressed his lips together.
It's not, though. Even if I did pull my head out of my ass, I shouldn't have shoved it up there in the first place.
He looked up and pinned Ezra in place again with his gaze.
That's why I'm asking for your forgiveness now, for everything I've done. Ezra was fully bewildered now. Kanan had nothing to apologize for. He'd come in the end, when Ezra really needed him. Couldn't he see that?
Ezra could feel the seriousness flowing off of him, though, and knew that it was important to him. So he met Kanan's gaze with his own, and put all of his feelings into his words.
I forgive you, then. Always will.
A feeling of relief washed over him, and for a moment, Ezra closed his eyes and gloried in feeling Kanan's emotions again. Then arms were wrapping around him and carefully pulling him into a warm hug, making his eyes pop back open.
Kanan!
Warm affection curled around him, so sweet and gentle he felt his eyes prickling with tears. Almost without his input, he found his arms wrapping around Kanan and returning the hug. He missed this feeling so much, this warmth. He'd gone years without feeling it when his parents were taken. Then he'd met Kanan and Hera and the others, and the feeling had come back and he'd gotten used to it again so quickly that it scared him when he stopped to think. When that had gone away... Well... He wasn't going to think about it.
Turning his head, Ezra snuggled into the crook of Kanan's shoulder and neck, not caring if anyone could see. Too quickly, though, pain began to prickle up and down his back. Even as he opened his mouth to say so, though, Kanan had pulled back and was helping him lie back down.
Sorry, he apologized. Got a little carried away. Forgot you hurt your back.
I hurt. Kanan must have noticed when he tensed, because he put a comforting hand back on Ezra's forehead.
She's gone, he said firmly. The Seventh Sister will never hurt anyone else again.
Ezra tightened his lips. He wanted to believe Kanan. Really, he did. But the Seventh Sister was so strong. Kanan sighed.
Sabine saw it all,
he said gently. She'll tell you the same when she comes to visit tonight.
Oh, man, the others! He hadn't even thought about them. Do they get out okay? What about the other kids?
Ezra tried to get back up, but one of his legs didn't seem to be moving right.
Impatient, he looked down, expecting to see a cast or something.
Instead, he saw nothing at all. Just an empty space under the sheets. All the strength flooded from his limbs, and he flopped back in his bed. His leg was gone. There was nothing. His leg just stopped a little ways above where his knee should be.
Kanan's large hands caught him and set him down carefully.
I know, Ezra, he said quietly, his voice a warm life preserver thrown to a drowning man.
I know.
My leg.
Ezra's voice cracked as it hit him.
She threw her lightsaber and it was gonna hit Sabine, so I pushed her out of the way.
And it hit you.
Kanan's hand was back on his head, stroking his hair.
I know. Sabine told us how brave you were, and the Resistance will be getting you a new leg, first thing.
Ezra's eyes were feeling hot and prickly again, but not with joy. Kanan's hand on his head was the only thing keeping the tears from falling.
The others are fine, by the way. The worst thing to happen was that Sabine lost her helmet, and we saved all of the kids.
Ezra's eyes were still burning.
Kanan stopped petting his hair. His hand moved down to cup the back of his neck, and then he was hugging Ezra again.
You're a hero, Ezra, he said quietly into Ezra's ear. A hero.
They stayed like that for several minutes, with Ezra breathing shakily and Kanan comforting him.
All that was going through his head, all that could go through it, it seemed, was the knowledge that where his leg should be, there was now nothing. He couldn't think of anything else. Not even all the other kids were safe.
His leg was gone.
Finally, though, he managed to get himself under control. Wiping at his eyes, he swallowed and took a deep breath. Kanan pulled back to let him, radiating concern.
Okay, Ezra said. Okay.
Do you want me to get a doctor?
Kanan asked softly. Ezra bit his lip.
No, he said quietly. Just, can you stay for a bit?
Of course.
Kanan shifted, turning his chair so that it was facing the same direction as Ezra was, and slipped his arm around Ezra's shoulders.
I'll stay as long as you need me.
The truth of those words rang softly in the Force. Not a loud declaration, but unrelenting all the same. Ezra soaked the reassurance in and rested his head on Kanan's shoulder.
Please don't go again.
I won't, Kanan replied. You're my Padawan, after all. His Padawan. That was a nice title. With those words echoing in his head, Ezra found himself relaxing and falling back to sleep, his head tucked under Kanan's chin. His Padawan. For as long as Ezra needed him. The end. Now paranoia is setting in the